Hello and welcome to episode 109 of the Liverpool Comedy Improvcast with me, Ian Luke-Jones. This is where we get to know the people who make up the LCI community and a place where we delve into all sorts of improv topics, and today's guest is the wonderful Sue Jackson. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever else you get your podcasts. We're even available on Amazon Podcasts, which means that you can ask Alexa to play the show. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave us a 5-star review and subscribe to the show to give us a boost and help get our name out there. And now it's time to go off script and find out Sue's true story about making stuff up. And please welcome to the show, Sue.
Hey, hiya.
Hello. Hiya. Well, I am very excited to chat with you. I only met you personally recently, a week or two back, but I've heard a lot about you from other improvisers in the LCI family. So it's been great to finally put a face to the name and now to dig a little deeper and find out who you are and what is your improv journey.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? To be sort of spoken about in advance and then, yeah, great. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, well, a few people had come to me and they'd be like, oh, you have to get Sue on podcast. She's really good. She's really good. So let's talk about that. How does it feel to have other people talking so positively about you and your improv?
Yeah, I mean, it's really nice, you know. It's really nice to hear that. And obviously it mirrors, I guess, the improv community in terms of it's a very positive force. It's a very supportive environment, and we're all there wanting each other to, you know, do well or to fail so magnificently that we get a massive laugh out of it. So yeah, it feels pretty nice to hear that. Yeah.
So let's just find out about your improv journey. When did it all begin? How did you get into improv?
It's probably in two places or two times. So originally, it was when I was younger. So when I was little, I did a lot of drama as like a little primary school kid. I was the Angel Gabriel in one production, which obviously is a very sought after role. And then from there, I sort of catapulted into more drama, more sort of bits of music as well. And when I was doing, I did a bit in the Everyman Youth Theatre when I was about 12, 13. And then I was in the Knowsley Youth Theatre for a while. And a lot of our performances were devised or improvised performances. So a lot of what we were doing was very sort of made up stories, made up scenarios, and made up movement work as well. So that was like the sort of starting point of improv. And of course, and actually, let's thread a bit of the psychology stuff through while we're here. I'm an only child, so I guess a lot of the play that I would exhibit would be either very much in my head or very much like puppets on fingers or very much sort of like dolls and stuff. So yeah, I've got quite a vivid sort of internal fantasy world as well from that time. So yeah, leaping onto the youth theatre, we would make up so much stuff. It was just incredible. And then from there, went into Liverpool Community College, which at that time, there was a lot of job and actors on the course. There was a lot of people who, you know, could sign on and off the dole and do courses. And, you know, it was like sort of a good way of people being able to hopefully have, you know, a performance career. And again, it was very much, you know, you're going to go into a community. Do the community want you to be there? Firstly, really good question. Secondly, if you're creating something, you know, you've got no budget. You might have bits of like material that you can use as like props. And like, let's get a story. How do we create a story? So it would be devising techniques. It would be impro games. And it would be just thinking on our feet a lot of the time, including, I remember this morning, we did this performance, which was because we were horror fans. I'm just going to caveat that a bit. We were horror fans. So we did this performance that we decided we would set in the women's toilet in particular, because we thought, well, that's going to alienate some of the people already. They've never been in there. They're going to be in women's toilet. They're going to be thinking, what's this about? And we set it as a restaurant. So it was, I had, you know, sort of like preparing food in one of the stalls and all this kind of stuff. And this was just a purely improvised piece. We had a bit of a framework of what we might cover, but it was just improvising with people that were in there. So that was where I sort of started an improv journey, was through, yeah, heavily with youth theatre and the Liverpool Community College. Then that dropped off. For me, it was sort of getting sidelined by boys and, you know, sort of moving out of home. And then, you know, having to get into work, essentially, you've got to pay bills, you've got to do all that real proper adulting stuff, Ian, which nobody really tells you properly what that's like. Mm-hmm. And so that was for a long, long period of time. But it was still there as well in the background. Then I trained from therapist to drama therapist, and it was intentionally at that point that I wanted to get back in touch with theatre and performance and expression, artistic expression. And then coming right up to date, I sort of felt like I was quite, my horizons become quite narrow. We'd had COVID. I was, you know, doing a lot of work online, which I still do online. I was like, I just need to be out and doing something. And I feel, I've done my drama therapy training, and now I've got all this stuff that I need to express, and I want to be out, and I want to have fun, and I want to have a laugh and make friends and all of that. And saw the Lift Festival last year, and that was wonderful. I felt really inspired that actually, okay, what's the thread that's coming through here? I've always done stuff that was like devising or making stuff up. Maybe that's where I could start again. So saw that Mark Smith was doing a course on long improv, contacted him, got on the course, and then, yeah, away we went. That was it. Then I was hooked again, proper.
Cool. So when did you actually then discover LCI drop-ins?
Yep. So we did 8 weeks on the course with Mark. And then at the end of it, I was like, I want to still carry this on. We have been and we are carrying on stuff with Mark for a little bit for a performance. But I was like, I want to still do something weekly. Found out about the LCI through word of mouth, through the community talking about it. And just thought, oh, okay, I'm going to go to it. And felt that sort of anticipation, but also the nervousness of going into a new group, of not knowing what to expect. You know, this is going to be like games, and oh my God, what will happen? And am I going to be funny? And all of those feelings and thoughts coursing through. Kind of like that scene in Alien where John Hurt is in the canteen, and they're like, you know, the food ain't that bad. It's like, you know, improv ain't that bad, but internally, my stomach may potentially want to come out of my body with nerves. So all that was going on, but I went in, and just everyone, you know, like Emma holds the space incredibly well. It's really fun, and just, it's like, let's move on. And other people that I've taken, you know, in the time that I've been doing it, other people that have been taking that role as well of holding the space. I've been incredible, and just everyone, it's just so, honestly, like genuinely so lovely there and so like supportive. And once everyone to just do it, just get up and do it, you know, it's great. Yeah. So that's why I joined that. And it's been the best decision I've made in years, frankly.
Yeah. The people that I've met through improv, they've impacted my life in such a positive way. And yeah, it's just this great vibe of people wanting you to succeed, which is not a normal thing, sadly. It's not the norm, I find, in sort of everyday life. So to have that community that you can discover and think, oh yeah, these are nice, genuinely nice people. Now, there are some around in the improv world that aren't like that, but fortunately, they are few and far between from what I've discovered.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I so far feel that I've met some incredible individuals who just have got these skills. Like there's certain people who, for me, as soon as they step up and they're about to walk into a scene, I just start laughing. Like there's people that just sort of like I'm really engaged with, but I'm engaged with everyone for different reasons because people are being themselves. We're playing, essentially. We're just playing, aren't we, in a way? But we're still being ourselves. We bring our own characteristics to that. We bring our own personality, our own quirks, to bring them out and let them have a little play out for a bit, don't we? And then we might pack the quirks away if we need to do more sort of adulting in the world. But yeah, it's a very, very supportive environment indeed. I'm very creative and fun. Yeah, it's wonderful.
So where I met you, it was at the Flintshire Funny Bone Intensive a week or two back. And that was a really fun day. I mean, it was a long day, but it didn't feel like a long day to me because everything just kind of flew by. And, you know, we had John Nguyen and Jen Kenny do different workshops with us. And then we had a jam. And I loved the jam. I thought everyone was fantastic in the jam. But I also really loved how everyone in those workshops just gelled together so well. It was a real mix of different people. And you know, quite a few of us had never met each other before, but you wouldn't have known it if you walked into the room because everyone was just so supportive of each other. And I just wanted to talk to you about the musical improv side of that because we did a musical improv workshop there, and you had some great musicality and you could clearly sing and you knew what you were doing with music. So it makes a bit of sense considering your performing background that you mentioned. But I just want to talk to you about musical improv. Was that your first time doing musical improv? Had you done it before at all?
Oh, no. That was my first time. Yeah, I would not have willingly, I don't think, signed up for that, even though I was at the workshop. I sort of found, as soon as I said yes to go into the workshop, it was afterwards I found out what it was. So I was like, oh no, musical improv, this, oh no. So there was a lot of sort of like, you know, internal hand-wringing going on. And I'd actually had an experience in the Everyman Youth Theatre many years ago, where part of what we had to do as a game was we had to go around and just sing a couple of lines of a song. And I was so, so overwrought and anxious. I was like about 13 or something doing this, that I just couldn't think of a song. I went completely blank. And people were like, you can just sing Happy Birthday. So I just went, oh, I'll just sing Happy Birthday. And I just, it was one of those things that was very nerve-wracking. So actually to come to it and do it at this point in a room where everyone's just getting up and doing it, and actually, I really didn't feel that many nerves. That surprised me. I really didn't feel that many nerves at all. I was more up for getting up and just belting out whatever tune came into my head. You know, I was more up for it. And I think that was because of the facilitators. Both John and Jen were great. The environment was really, you know, you and Seki had just like brought all this together in a way that we just had to bring ourselves. We didn't have to think about it. We were just like, yeah, we're here and we're doing this. So the environment, the context was really supportive and given and allowed for us to kind of jump in and just be a bit gregarious, you know, like just like be a bigger character. Than perhaps we might allow ourselves to be. Maybe internally we do think that we're a big character. Certainly I do. So to allow that to come out externally then is like, way, this is brilliant. Yeah, it's great, that one. Really good.
Yeah, it was cool. I loved the vibe of the day, and everyone that came was just so, so amazing, yet so chill at the same time. Like, I loved all the in-between bits, everyone just sitting, chatting. It was really cool.
Yeah, those bits are part of the magic, aren't they? Yeah. Those bits where like you've just done, you know, sort of like a couple of hours of workshopping, and then you're like, what do you mean the chippy's not open? You know, it's like these are all the moments that are like the bonding moments. And yeah, people were laying back, sitting back, relaxing, sharing bits about ourselves. And also, you know, there was a high amount of discussion around all the cakes that were coming out. You know, there was just literally cake after cake after cake coming out, which actually, you know, a spoonful of sugar always helps that medicine go down. You know, so yeah, that was great. Yeah, really good day, really good day.
Yeah, we got fortunate with the cakes there because Nikki that was making those cakes, she is one of the people that runs the cafe, and she decided, oh, well, since this is going on, this is a good opportunity while the actual cafe is closed for me to come in and make all of these cakes. So we benefited from that.
We absolutely did benefit from that, because every time she was coming out, it was like, you know, like we sort of stopped. What is it that you've got now? Oh, this one's chocolate. I'm just done the frosting on the top and it's still warm. I mean, my God, you know, shouldn't this be part of what improv is all the time? Like, shouldn't there be a moment where somebody has like a, doesn't just mime a trolley, but brings a trolley of warm cakes through?
Well, it kind of is part of the Flinch and Funny Bone improv all the time, because every time we have our session, which is every other Monday, there's always cakes there. And we start our night by people sort of having a cup of tea and maybe a slice of cake. And then after an hour, we give people another opportunity to have another brew and some more cake. So it is part of our improv thing. And Nikki that makes the cakes is actually going to be making some cakes for our wedding. She is using the Mondays when we go to cycle through different types of cakes so we can sample all the different types of cakes to see which ones we want to have out on the wedding table.
Oh, that's incredible, you know. That's really lovely. That kind of sense of, you know, your wedding, but who's been involved in it. You know, there's sort of like aspect of people that you know getting involved. And I guess there's something about cakes that are created by people that you've got this affinity with already for such a special day. Like, that sounds right, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, we're very excited because we're really pulling so many people in from different sort of parts of our life, but we're excited about how they're all going to gel together, and especially all the people from the improv community, because Seki and I, that's where we met, and all of our mutual friends are pretty much from the improv community. So there's going to be a strong improviser presence there, and there will actually be improv at our wedding.
Come on now. That's great. That's great. So the 50-hour improvisation that's just happened in London, which I think the theme was around a wedding, it looked like. Are you going to like maybe do like a sort of 72-hour wedding to see if you can sort of, I don't know, I'll do that a bit in a way, I don't know, or maybe
I'm sure we could afford a 72-hour wedding.
Yeah, you just take it around different people's houses. I think at that point you just sort of go from sort of house to house and continue the party on. That sounds great. That sounds really good. Yeah, really good.
Now, something you mentioned earlier was being a drama therapist. I've never heard of one of those, and I'm interested to find out exactly what one is.
Yeah, well, we're very mysterious and we live in the dark, so that's probably why you haven't heard of us before. So a drama therapist is an art psychotherapist. So we work with, in my particular training, I work with ritual. So creating rituals around, you know, ritual as a form of container. So basic ritual could be like, you know, in improv sense, beginning, middle and end. So you'd have like easier games, getting into the main meat of something, the main sort of body of what you're doing, and then something to let you get out again. So that would be like almost like a ritual. You've got like a beginning, middle, end container. But also worked a lot with myth. So mythology for me feels like, anyway, communing with something very, very old, feels like working with a very old story, like psychologically speaking. Those stories are up down there for all of us, almost regardless of where the story is set. So themes that you might find in lots of myths that run through, yeah, they feel like they go on forever. So with drama therapy, what we might do is something like have somebody enact a myth. So say you got like a scene, and it could be like something like the, you know, like the story of Sisyphus, who's rolling the boulder up the hill and then gets to the top and it rolls back down and they have to roll that boulder back up again. And it could be a sense of, you know, you're being Sisyphus, but you're also going to be the character of Hades having this conversation. And although that's what you're acting out and that's what's being performed, what happens is your own material fills the space. So it could be all of a sudden that you're having a conversation with your dad.
Right.
But at the same time, you've got aesthetic distance because it's a story, it's a myth. That's all you're doing, it's a myth. But your own material also fills the space. So that distance allows for you to do, you know, a lot of talking to, a lot of expression of things from your life. A lot of working out of stuff. If you imagine there's people that you might not have been able to have a conversation with in life because you're distanced from them, or they might not be around anymore for whatever reason, the idea that you can do that through a story is really powerful. You're able to maybe get some kind of conclusion from that, or maybe just the expression of something that you were never able to do is enough. That's enough.
Is this done on a one-to-one basis?
It's done one-to-one, it's done group, it's done with every group you can imagine. So there's drama therapists that work with children, children with varying levels of, you know, needs, adults, again, with varying levels of needs, trauma centres, you know, all, you know, care homes, any place that you can imagine you could have arts as a form of well-being, drama therapy sits in there.
Okay, cool. So are people referred to you, or do people just seek you out themselves?
Generally, people just seek me out themselves. And a lot of the work that I do tends to fall under what you might know as like talking therapy more so. So a lot of it tends to be more that approach of the conversation and the reflection. But because I've got all this stuff and I'm quite a creative person, like I'll still sort of say to people, if you're going to describe that though as a landscape, how would you describe that? If you're feeling like a character in a fairy tale right now with what you're telling me, who would that character be? And honestly, every time that comes out, there's more that we get from it, because the symbol or the myth or the metaphor that we're using holds a lot more in it. Someone saying that they feel like an odd one out in a family, if they're then saying, well, what I feel like is I feel like maybe Cinderella, there's more within that sort of archetype in a way of Cinderella that there is in saying I feel an odd one out. Already we've got more information because we both know that story. We can both say, okay, well, yeah, so what, in what ways are you the odd one out? Like what would Cinderella do in this sort of instance? Like where does Cinderella fit into this? Like does she get the pumpkin? Does she get the prince? Does she just get off? Does she live an independent life? Is that what Cinderella really wanted to do? So you've got this like whole framework which allows for someone to talk about their life in a way that feels less directly impactful.
Okay. You just mentioned in Cinderella there. I've got this really great version of Cinderella, which I love to read to my class. And it's from the point of view of the stepmother, but it paints Cinderella to be the real pain. And the stepmother is, in her eyes, is the one that's hard done to. And it's really interesting. But I just love looking at all stories from different angles. One of my favorite films is The Labyrinth. One of my favorite scenes in The Labyrinth is the moment where she encounters the worm when she's walking through the actual labyrinthy part of the labyrinth with the walls. And she's saying she can't see any way through. And he says, it's literally right in front of you. And she's like, no, it's just a wall. And he says, well, just walk through it. And then she walks through and realizes that, oh, the wall is actually further away. It's just the illusion that the wall is there. And so it's all about changing your perspective. And that has been like one of my key teaching philosophies for my entire career. It's all about helping people to see different perspectives and not just always look at things from one way. There's always other ways of seeing things.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what? When you said that then, it reminded me of a scene. Have you seen the film Willow?
Yes.
So in that, when the old sort of magician character comes out, he's like, so which finger is the magical finger? You point which finger? And like Willow's going, oh, is it that finger? Is it that finger? And he picks what's essentially the wrong finger. And afterwards he talks to the magician. And the magician says, what was your instinct? What finger did you want to pick? And he said, well, I wanted to pick my own finger. And he said, well, that's the right one. That was the right one all along. And that stays with me because I think there's something about trusting yourself, trusting that gut instinct or that little inner voice somewhere that says, yeah, do this thing. You're not even sure why you're doing it sometimes, but it's like, yeah, do this thing. Follow the bliss, follow the path. But also the sense of almost giving power away to others. You know, they're more powerful. Where's the magic in the world? Oh, it's with this magician that's that. It's like, no. We've all got our own agency and our own magic and our own power. So, yeah, I can really resonate with that sense of you watch something and it really, you carry it into adulthood. You're like, yeah, this is a proper lesson.
Yeah. Also, we lose as we get older that sort of instinct to say what we think. So if in the instance there, if Willow was like a 5-year-old child and they felt that it was their finger, they'd just say, well, it's my finger. But then as you get older, you start to think, oh no, I don't want to say that. It seems a bit weird to say my finger. And you get those inhibitions. And because I work in primary school, I see that changeover of when that happens. So I spent a long time working sort of with the year 5-6 children. I was a music teacher for 9 years and I used to teach from right through the school from reception up to year 6. And for some children, it starts in about year 4. For some children, it starts in year 5. But by the time most of them have got to year 6, they've become very defensive in a way that they never used to be. And they don't want to be the one that speaks up. They don't want to be the one that shows off their talents because they don't want to be looked at. Oh, if I'm doing this, then people are looking at me and they're judging me. But when they're in year 1, 2, 3, and most of year 4, I would say as well, and then perhaps year 5 is really where you start to see some of those changes come in. But it's just fascinating that that's a society way of doing things. It's just, I don't know why, but society makes those changes happen to children at a certain point. And I don't know how to stop it.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you very clearly there. Well, loads of things sparked up for me when you were saying that. Part of it is that, you know, we are in systems where, you know, schooling sort of tends to become at a higher level than what you're talking about. When we get into like secondary and stuff, the emphasis seems to be on you as like being a means of production, like on work, like this is what you're going to become. I mean, that's the system we're in. We're in the system where we have to work. But at the same time, it's like, you know, where's that sense of who, not what you produce, but who you are as a person, like what, you know, what you're about. I think the creative arts, I would literally, if I got my way, so if somebody said, here you go, you've got some power, so have some power and you can do things, I would say, okay, let's have all these shops, you know, like retailers supposedly starting to diminish and there's lots of buildings that are left empty. So let's open those up and let's have creative arts in there, arts on prescription, improv in there, all different levels of writing, movement. And I would have that like a mental health NHS free at the point of entry. And you can have it when you need it, not like a waiting list of 2 years, you know, for some, I'm aware that they can be very long trying to gain access for support, especially mental health. I would have them open in communities and places. And part of what that would do would be to actually put an emphasis on how being a creative human being is part of who we are. It's part of our makeup, our soul. It's part of everything about us. And it's really important that we are able to express that part of our lives. It would also hopefully allow for a sense of, in psychological terms, sort of armoring that happens. So we start to place this armor on against the world because we start to feel judgment about who we are, judgment about how we look, judgment about how we speak, how we move, how we dress. All of this and much more is part of what we start to feel socially, and maybe in the home, and maybe from school, maybe from tutors, maybe from friends, especially, you know, like social media is a big influence now with all of that. So I would use these de-armoring skills of what is it like to be in a room with other people. We're all very different, but you can come in and you can shout as loud as you want. You can shout as loud as you want. God knows there's been times when I've wanted to scream my head off, Ian, really loudly, like just properly scream, you know, really loudly, like a proper like bestial moment. You can do whatever you want. You can scream in this room. You can run around. You can play, you know, maybe keep it light as well. You know, you can do whatever you want. So actually, yeah, I think that what you're saying is right. We do start to disconnect from ourselves in some respect. We start to armor ourselves up, ready for a really tough world. And the softness that's within is something that we can maybe express through the arts. And I think it's through things like the arts that we get that healing. I really do. I would never have trained as a drama therapist, especially one that's dealing with Carl Jung and all that wonderful, weird stuff that I quite enjoy as well. I wouldn't have done all of that over 3 years if I didn't believe that that was what really brings about healing for people.
Oh, yeah. It's great that you're doing it. I've loved hearing about it. It very much falls in line with my thoughts, because I've been in education for 20 years now, and I have many issues with the education system. I think it's fundamentally flawed. I think it's hugely outdated. And it's different in Wales to England, but they're still both as bad as each other. And the problem for me is, so in Wales, for example, they've made loads of changes and they've said it's more about well-being and expression and all this kind of thing. But ultimately, it's not. All they care about is the results at the end. And until they change that, whatever comes before it isn't going to matter. And effectively, the schooling system is the same as it's always been. It was set up in the Victorian times to get people ready for work, and it's still that. It's just a system to get people ready for work, but people are ready at different times in life. So just because you're 4, for example, doesn't mean that you should be going to school, because some children are ready for that at 4, some children are ready for that at 3, some children aren't ready for that until they're 6 or 7, and that should be the starting point. When they're deemed ready, they shouldn't be forced into the system. And also, I'm an expressive arts lead for the school, and I know that no one else cares about expressive arts, and that's a problem that I have. They see it as, oh, we'll squeeze that in on a Friday afternoon or something so we don't have to teach proper stuff, and it hurts to hear that or to feel that from others, that it is not important. But I think the reason it is because people like certainties. People like yes or no, that is right or that is wrong, and they can't have that with the expressive arts. If a child brings you a picture and it's not the picture that you had in mind that they were going to give you, it's still a work of art. It's their picture. They might not sing the way you want them to sing, but they're expressing themselves. They might not dance the way you want them to dance, but they're expressing themselves. And those that love exam results and measuring things struggle with the expressive arts because they can't measure it.
Absolutely. It's the same thing with, you know, with drama therapy and you know, psychotherapy and all of that. It's like, how do you measure something that feels quite intangible? Like how measuring feelings, you know, so like, you know, you feel better after having, say, 12 sessions of therapy. There are lots of really interesting measuring tools out there. But like you're saying, it's like how you measure something that feels, yeah, intangible, like feels like it's part of the human makeup. It's not a really logical sort of process to get to that measurement at all. And there's lots, yeah, like I say, there's lots of different ways. We've found our way around that. Thankfully, lots of people that have been pioneering in the arts for years have been had to find their way of measuring that. But this sense of, you know, that when children are ready for work, I sort of feel as though we have sort of co-opted a sense of purpose and sort of like sort of made sure that people, it's not a sense of purpose, it's like what you, it's what you produce, it's what you, what's what you make, it's how you work, it's how we keep everything ticking along. And I think that that sense of purpose stays with us from when we're very young and we find our way back to it. That was certainly the case for me with drama. Like I was doing it at a very young age. I could be quite introvert, extrovert, you know. So it allowed me to find an extrovert and find a voice. But that stayed with me throughout loads of, well, throughout all my life, it stayed with me as like a really important aspect of myself, you know. So how do we nurture those senses of purpose, that those little acorns within us that are like, this is what I enjoy doing. You know, some people might be like, you know, quantum physics, I don't know why, but I just enjoy doing it. I love that realm. Great. This is where you should go. Like, how do we do that? How do we nurture those parts of ourselves? And I guess, you know, if nothing else besides all the laughs and the support and the community and all the good times and all that with improv, it sort of feels like it gives a sense for you to try out different views, gives you a sense of trying out. There's a different version of me here. I'm gonna improvise in this scene. And for some reason, I'm being a scientist. I'm just gonna talk as though I'm a scientist. That stuff's coming from somewhere. We're channeling something from somewhere. These different parts or aspects, or, you know, again, intangible. What is it that we're channeling? Where's this coming from? How come somebody can be all of a sudden, playing a physicist and then they're playing, you know, a deranged rabbit? Like how does this work? Where does this come from? So yeah, I think there's something about nurturing our sense of who we are from a young age, and just allowing that to nurture and grow through, and that goes across the board with all aspects of who we are as humans, I think.
Yeah, and just linking it all to improv, there was a phrase that was said a lot during the pandemic, because lots of people went online with improv during the pandemic, people that had never done it before, and it really took off. And it was a difficult time for the mental health of lots of people, and people started to talk about it being like therapy. But then it became very clear that the message was, improv is not therapy, but it can be therapeutic. And I think that's still a really important message. And I know when I go to sessions and I've had all sorts going on, but I've committed to that session, so I'm going because I'm running it generally. So I can't just say, oh, I'm not going to go today. I know when I come to the end of it, I feel better. I have cleared my mind from some of the issues. The issues are still there, but they don't feel so bad. So I think that's what's good about improv. It helps you just free up your mind a little bit. And the difference there is, you know, you go to therapy, you get to the root of the problem. Improv doesn't get to the root of your problem, but it does give you an opportunity to express feelings and get things out of your system.
Yeah, completely. And I guess me, as that of sort of observing, sort of I'm not a psychoanalyst yet. It's something I'd be interested in doing at some point. It's very expensive, Ian, and you have to have therapy 3 times a week for a number of years, so not yet. But as a psychotherapist, that's the word. Dropping words today. As a psychotherapist, that part of me is really interested in that process of what makes those two things different. What makes improvisation and some of the stuff that I might do, what's the difference in that? And it is completely what you're saying. It's like the safety, the rules, the container for improv is like, you know, we're going to keep it light. There's the respect elements, which is really, really important and vital. You know, it's going to be quick games. It's going to be, you know, there's going to be fun aspect of it. You know, this is where you're going to fail. This is where you come in and fail, and it's going to be celebrated. And yet it can be therapeutic, because I think there's something, isn't there, about being in a group with people where you start to build connections, where you start to feel maybe understood by them, that what you're doing is this fun thing and they're doing it and we're all enjoying it. And you're also being, given a chance to use your voice, be seen, be witnessed in aspects of yourself that are not necessarily about you sort of logically, actively doing that, consciously doing that. But, you know, being able to bring these different aspects where you could be like a superhero in one scene, you know, or like a villain, super villain in another scene, really funny. Yeah, very therapeutic. And certainly for me, a big part of me coming, like I said earlier, a big part of me coming to improvisation was that I did feel this sense of distancing from the world. I felt like I wasn't in the world. I was doing work and I was doing therapy work, but I myself wasn't in the world in an active or expressive way. And I missed being around people, and I missed, you know, yeah, just having things to do, things to look forward to. I mean, it was really a very narrow world that I got into. And most of that was due to a succession of bereavements that I had over COVID. So I'd had a lot of bereavements, which were quite significant ones, in a very short period of time. And as a result, I was like, I need to just get into the cave for a bit and just not come out and be the hermit. And I needed to do that. But then there was that sense, okay, I've done that now. There's a bit of sunlight outside the cave. I need to come out. But I suppose fundamentally, who am I at this point? And that was it. It was like, who am I now? What do I know? Well, I loved theatre and I loved pretending and I loved all of that. So maybe if I get back in touch with that, maybe that will allow me to kind of find out who I am now. So there was that aspect, which is not, like you say, is not therapy, but is definitely therapeutic. Definitely therapeutic. Making new mates, it's therapeutic, isn't it?
Yeah. So moving forwards now, what do you see yourself doing in improv? How does your future in improv look?
Oh, God. Well, I don't know. I don't know. And honestly, that's quite exciting. I don't know what that will look like. I don't know what will be part of it. I'm in a group that's improvising a funeral week, which feels very on the nose considering all the bereavements I've had. And that's part of it as well. That's like an interesting mixture, you know. So I'm doing that as part of the Liverpool Improvisation Festival. So there might be something around that funeral wake idea, maybe going to other festivals. That's part of what we're discussing at the moment. We might see if we can take that out a bit further. For me as an individual, I mean, I don't know. I'd be quite up for people throwing ideas my way. I think at this moment in time, it's like, okay, if anyone's got any ideas, throw them and I'll say yes. Or I might just, there might be like a gang that's traveling around doing improv and and I might just run away with them. That might happen as well. Who knows, you know, who knows?
So what is the name of the group that you're doing the wake with?
They're called the Insiders 2.0.
Okay.
So it's Mark Smith who has directed it and has conceived the idea and is pulling all the stuff together. And it's doing all that stuff like, you know, you'll know this, you know, like you have to book rooms and you have to do all the admin stuff. You know, he's doing all that really, really sort of like boring stuff as well. But yes, that's what that's called. And I think one of the things amongst many that LIFF, the festival, does really well and Mark does really well is that he creates all this other stuff. So he captures the improv stuff. So it's not just a moment that we've had live and it's gone. You know, these things get filmed. So they're all filmed from the first year, last year. They're going to get filmed again this year. You were in the first one, weren't you? Or were you?
Yes, I performed with the Glossop Improv in the first one. And I'm performing in this one with the Oikers as well.
Yeah, I'm coming to watch. I'm going to be cheering you on or whatever it is that I should be doing as part of the performance.
I remember last year, I had not long got back from the Philippines and I was still really struggling with jet lag and things. So the festival kind of passed me by. I turned up, I did my thing with Glossop and then I went home.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a good enough reason, isn't it? Jet lag. Like, yeah. You know, yeah. Yeah, it's a good enough reason, isn't it? But yeah, so you'll be there. We'll be there. We'll be watching you. You might be watching us. I don't know.
When is your show? Is it on the Saturday or the Friday?
On the Saturday at 3:45.
Well, then, yeah, hopefully I'll be sticking around more on a Saturday, so I might get to come and see.
Yeah. So it's and that's really good to be able to see different people, different parts of the country, maybe the world, and then being able to network a little bit as well. Being able to chat to people afterwards is quite good. So to see what people are doing, like you're asking me, what's your future? Just like seeing what other people are doing, getting inspired by other people's ideas. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it's always just fun to chat with improvisers and see what they've got going on and what shows or workshops and things that might be on the horizon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's workshops at LIFF, isn't there? There's yeah. War workshops there as well. So, yeah. It's very fruitful, isn't it, at the moment? Improv.
Yeah, I would say so. I'd say particularly fruitful because the Oikas will be there and fruit is our thing.
Yeah. I realised as I said it, you know, that I was thinking, yeah, because it didn't come from pickers.
Yeah, it came from fruit pickers being spelt wrong, which became fruit Oikas. So yeah, I was in the scene where it all happened. So, and it was me that declared this should be your name.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it should, shouldn't it? That's a great name. It's a great name. Yeah, you were in the genesis of the moment. Whoa.
Yeah,
here we are. We've stepped out of pickers and we've become Oikas.
And it just makes a lot of people be like, "What's that name? Like, what's that mean?" So it's a good talking point.
And also that you've still got fruit and Oikas together. It's just, yeah, it's great. Really, really funny. Really funny.
I have to say, the actual design of our logo and things, that is fully down to Stu Hughes. He's amazing at designing that kind of stuff. And he put our logo together and came up with that concept of keeping all the fruit in there.
Yeah, it's that good. I mean, I've had a chance of improvising with probably a lot, bar about a couple of people, I think, out of the Oikas so far through LCI. So I'm looking forward to, like, yeah, improvising with them again a bit if they're there at the drop-ins, but also seeing them all, you know, seeing you all together. Like, what happens when you come together? Like, that's what really interests me here. Like, as individuals or maybe bits of groups have seen you, but, you know, what's the Oikas' majesty when they get together? What's the magic that happens there?
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it, because it's very exciting when we get together in person because we tend to do everything online.
Okay, yeah.
So we got together in person the other day and we'll get together in person one more time before we do LIFF. And then we'll be together live on stage at LIFF. We're very excited because we're doing something we haven't done before and we're still really buzzing from doing it the first time together the other day. And it's going to finish our set at the festival. And yeah, we're excited about how it's going to go down.
Oh, that's great. I mean, that, yeah, yeah. I don't want to know anything about that because that's just enough information, isn't it? That's just enough information to kind of go, yeah, what's this going to be about? Like, my curiosity's there already. Yeah.
Well, this has been a wonderful chat. So thank you very much for coming on. We've gone to places I could never have predicted, which is what I love about this chat. I never know what we're going to talk about. And it's been really interesting finding out about your drama therapy and then the chats about education and things. Just final words I want to ask. Do you have social media links you want to share with anyone if anyone wants to interact with you?
Yeah, 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 please do. So I've got... Mostly it's on Twitter and Instagram. And if you just look up Sue Jacko, you'll just find me. Like, that's S-U. The Sue is S-U without an E. And Jacko, J-A-C-K-O. You will definitely find me out there. But you'll find me through all the improv things as well. Do contact. We'll talk some Carl Jung. Be great.
And you can be regularly found at the LCI drop-in. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's every other week that I go because I'm rehearsing at the moment on the alternative weeks.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm usually there though. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure to chat with you.
You too. Thanks, Ian.
Well, thank you so much to Sue. I really love that chat. I like it when we can go down different rabbit holes, and I feel like we certainly went down a couple of rabbit holes there. So thanks to Sue for just being so cool and for opening up and being so happy to just talk about these things that we're very passionate about. Now, the Liverpool Improvisation Festival, in the time that we're listening to this, has just gone. It hasn't happened in the time I'm recording. But if you did go along to that festival, I hope you had a great time. And if you got an opportunity to see Sue perform, that's awesome. If you got an opportunity to see me or any of the other LCI alumni perform, then I hope you had a great time. Or I hope you just had a great time sort of being there, soaking up the atmosphere, because I'm predicting it will have been a lot of fun all round. So maybe I had a chat with you at the festival and I spoke to you about coming on this show in the future. That would be cool, wouldn't it? Yeah. Now, just before I finish everything up here, I just want to say I've got some really cool voice acting news, but I'm not going to share it just yet. But watch this space, because there's great things happening for me in the voice acting world, and I'm excited about what's ahead. I'm also excited about the many wonderful guests and specials we have coming up on this show as well. So as always, watch this space. Now, if you are interested in getting into improv or already involved in improv and want to try out a different improv scene, then all the information you need can be found at www.liverpoolcomedyimprov.co.uk. You can also check us out on Facebook by searching for Liverpool Comedy Improv, and on X and Instagram we are at Liv Comedy Improv. If you want to check out this show on Facebook, we have a specific Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and type in Liverpool Comedy Improv Cast, and you'll find all things you need to know about the show there. If you're a member of the LCI community and you'd like to be a guest on the show, then please get in touch with me or with Emma Bird, and we'll make arrangements as soon as possible. If you have been on the show already talking about your journey, but you want to come on and maybe do one of the specials where we do the A to Z of improv, or we do Room 101, then get in touch as well, because we'd love to have you back. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, as always, please give us 5 stars, leave us a positive review, because it's little things like that that help to boost the show and help get our name out there. If you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, X, YouTube, TikTok, LinkedIn. I think that covers it all. And I have a website as well. So just go to my website, ianlukejones.com. You'll find all things me on my website, ianlukejones.com. That's I-A-I-N, lukejones.com. And yeah, you might find out about my exciting voice acting news on there soon. So my website kind of covers everything. It focuses on my voice acting, but there's improv stuff on there as well. I do have some courses that I run sometimes. I've got one coming up, Improv for Voice Actors. So if you're interested in that, check out my website. And along with that, I've got my Instagram and my Facebook, which are mostly personal. YouTube's got all sorts of stuff that I've done on there, and then my X and my LinkedIn these days are very much centered around my voice acting. So that's me on socials. Give me a follow. Just not in real life, because if you're following me in real life, just walking around, lurking around corners, that's a bit weird, isn't it? Don't do that. So that pretty much brings us to an end this week. Thanks again to Sue. Really loved that chat. But before I go, here are some words that are wise, wise, wise. Always remember, whatever the situation, to treat life like improv. And yes, and...